9 guest rooms, restaurant, and bar, specializing in wedding packages, including rehearsal dinner, ceremony, reception, farewell brunch, and accommodations for guests. And golf memberships are available for Hannah's 18-hole championship golf course. Information at hannahcountryresort.com or 845-586-4849. The Slider Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency educating consumers about safe driving and about coverage options. Open Monday through Friday, 8:30 till 5. More information at 845-586-2641 or slideragency.com. The Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org. Sam's and Fleischmann's, Sam's Country Store Deli and Gas Station, open every day for groceries, Mexican herbs, local craft beer, and with food to go, sandwiches, tortas, and tacos, and on weekends, tamales. Sam's on Main Street in Fleischmann's. Sam's Country Store, NY.com.
We know the elders, but New Jazz Excursions will focus on the latest generational freeform thinkers and creators making vital America's greatest cultural legacy. So join me, Mike Jakovic, for New Jazz Excursions, alternate Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in the Catskills at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable, Channel 20, streaming at WIOXradio.org and on all your smartphone radio apps.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi, on smart devices, through the radio FM app, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have Zane on from Catskill Forest Association. How's it going, Zane?
Good, Ryan. How you doing?
I'm all right. What have you been up to?
Well, me and my wife did a hike this Sunday. We hiked out in the to the Vernoy Falls.
Yeah, Vernoykill.
Yeah, Vernoykill. We're out in the Sundown Wild Forest there. It was nice. We drove two cars. I parked her car up at the end of trails in there, and then we drove down and hiked from my truck off the Upper Cherrytown Road there and hiked all the way through to her car and drove from there. But I was happy to see the falls there.
Yeah, it's pretty there.
Yeah. The Yeah, you told me that it was an old grist mill there.
As far as I know, all right, when I read the unit management plan for Sundown Wild Forest many years ago, I think the Cornelius Vernoy owned a grist mill there, which is a big deal back in the day. Big deal. Hmm. So that was a heavily traveled road. But now it's in state land there, but as you noticed, there was an apple tree right at the junction of the trail there, so
yeah,
things are going
right
on.
Out. Yeah. Hmm.
But yeah, I saw a fisher. Haven't seen one in a few years. It was underneath my tree stand. And this is the second time this has happened where they're definitely following my scent trail to my tree stand because you can see him coming a long ways away. And he just stood underneath the tree and looked up at me. And once he understood by smell, I think, he just went away. But I haven't seen a fisher in a while, so that was neat. Yeah. That's the only thing I saw. I didn't see any deer. It's too warm. Mosquitoes are out. That did not make me happy hunting. But other than that, the fall foliage is better than expected despite the wet weather and anthracnose and leaf diseases. And I got to say, I got to give a shout out to the most underrated fall foliage tree, and that would be sassafras. That tree is amazing. So if you're looking for a tree for excellent fall foliage, and it turns both yellow or gold, as I originally thought, but also deep, dark red as well, which I did not know until one on my hedgerow or stone wall was so beautiful red, I went and checked it out and said, it's a sassafras, what the heck? Turning red, not yellow. So if you want that kind of tree for that reason, definitely plant it. But other than that, went metal detecting. That was pretty neat. There's a lot of history out there, I'll just say that. And a lot of things have been forgotten, you know. But they're still in the woods. Just underneath the surface, so.
Found anything interesting?
Found an old axe head.
Wow.
Yeah, from the 1800s. Scythes. It's pretty cool finding a scythe when the timber around average diameter is well above 25 inches, and you find a scythe. And you're like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Pretty cool, you know? Huh. Grass. In timber. But tonight, we have Woodsman Forest Products with Tom, and I'm going to butcher your last name, Tom, Lindvite. How do you say this?
Everybody does. It's Lindvite.
All right.
Pretty much, I always say common spelling, common pronunciation.
Lindvite.
Yeah.
Got it. So Tom Lindvite, he's the owner of Woodsman Forest Products, retired EMT, serves small forest owners to get started. He's got decades in the woods, supplanted by field training and silviculture, trained logger certified, best management practices, timber stand improvement, and wildlife habitat improvement. Tom is using this, and I'll quote, his last third of his life to do things he enjoys, make some folks happy along the path, learn new things, and enjoy family, friends, and music. Hopefully he will make a few bucks along the way to buy food. I hope so. You're not starving, are you?
No, I'm not.
Thank
yet.
God.
Not yet.
Well,
it's always around the corner.
Yeah. So how you doing?
Good, good.
Thanks for coming on.
It's a beautiful fall this year.
It is.
You know, it's looking pretty. Leaves are starting to change here.
Yeah.
It's fun being out in the woods.
Definitely.
It's up in Vermont this past weekend, and colors there are just a little bit more advanced. Usually they're about 2 weeks ahead of us, but this time they're just a little ahead of us.
Hmm.
You know.
How do they compare to the upper elevations of the Catskills?
Like, it's neck and neck.
Yeah.
You know, overall for the whole season. But, you know, this time of year, they're definitely a lot more tourists up there driving off the road as they're looking at the trees and, you know. And we'll get those same tourists over here in another 2 weeks.
Right.
Doing the same thing.
Leaf peepers.
Yeah.
Yep. Remember growing up, you'd see a car growing up in New Paltz along the flats there. Like a mile ahead, you know, just stop in the middle of the road.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'd be like, what are they looking at? Why aren't they moving?
Yep. I live on the south side of the reservoir and on the eastern dike. I see them all the time. They just stop in the middle of the dike, leave the car there, get out, and go for a walk. Like, there's a parking spot at each end. You can leave it there all day if you want. But
yep, no, people still drive around here, and they have jobs and work and travel the road. So we got to – so just, yeah, you know. Let's tell us about your business here, Woodsman Forest Products. Well, what would be your values as Woodsman Forest Products?
That I'm still trying to decide. Right now, the main goal of the business was to have some fun. I retired June of 2020, hastened on by the pandemic, like I imagine a lot of other people. And I needed to do something to supplant the income. And I decided that I was done with machining and manufacturing and that stuff that I've done for the last 50 years. And I've always enjoyed messing around on the weekends with a little bit of rustic woodworking, a lot of walking in the woods mindlessly just to watch and enjoy and learn stuff and then come home at night and look stuff up in books, you know. And I've done that my whole life. So I decided to see if I could help some people out. So I got a sawmill a couple of years back. I do mill a little lumber, but with a manual sawmill, as you know, you can't do production work with that. So no, I don't mill out a bill of materials for a house or anything like that. But if somebody wants to build a small shed or they want to build a table or they have a log that was on their property and got cut down and they want to bring it over and I'll mill it up so they can make a table out of it so they can keep that wood in the family, legacy tables, things like that.
Right.
Generally what people are looking for, you know, I don't do a lot of stuff on speculation, except that I make stuff sometimes to just to prove to myself that I can't do it, or sometimes it's successful, you know, and then it sits in the shop until somebody says, "Ooh, I like that, how much you want for it?"
Yeah.
And then it goes, but I have a lot of stuff sitting in the shop. And I also do, you know, property consulting for small landowners, the folks that fall between the cracks. Maybe they have 2 acres, maybe they have 5 or 10, 15, but it's really hard to get a forester to come in and, you know, give them an assessment because the forester can't really make any money off of handling a woodlot that size. It's not really a woodlot. They don't know what it is. So I go in and I walk their property with them and I give them some ideas. You could do this or you could do this. These are native trees. These are not native trees. These were planted a long time ago, probably from an abandoned farm or, you know, just to try and give them some kind of a feeling for their property and then, you know, some ideas that they can look at. Once in a while, they want to just be do-it-yourselfers, but they don't know how, so I can work with them, you know, spend a couple of weekends here and there or weekdays or whatever, helping them learn how to use the tools and what tools they need. I'll run the chainsaw for them because they're not comfortable with that a lot of times. And if they want something bigger, they have a larger plan, then I can find them the right people to help them move that along. And it's really a nice little niche because you're helping people out, but I'm not there to make money off of them by taking their trees or buying their logs or, you know, or anything like that. I'm just there to help them think it through.
Yeah.
So I don't really have any skin in the game, which hopefully puts them more at ease.
What drew you to the woods in the first place? I mean, cutting trees and stuff, you're still cutting trees and out there. I mean, it's still a hazardous job.
Well, there's hazardous and then there's hazardous. I've been in some hazardous situations, but in the woods, yes, you're right. Trees are still dangerous, and you shouldn't be out there alone. I do go out alone, but I have, you know, a plan on top of a plan. Somebody knows when I'm going in, and they also know when I should be coming out, and they also know where to find me if I don't come out. So there is that, you know. Yeah. I like to say, I take a cell phone with me, but where I cut most of the time, there is no service. So, you know, that doesn't help me much.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I can get a text message out in a couple hours. But, you know, you just have to be on your toes. You keep your head on a swivel. You know, it's not just the trees and the widowmakers and stuff like that. It's wildlife. You know, I did a lot of cutting in June when the sows were starting to move out with their cubs. And I was in bear country. I saw fresh sign every day. And that had me more concerned than what was over my head.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah, because it was so thick. That bear would come out of those bushes be 20 feet away from you before you could see it.
Yeah.
And when you're alone, you just, you know, I've run into enough bears with cubs. If, as long as I keep my distance and mama knows I'm there and she can choose a different path, 9 times out of 10, she'll just go the other way.
You ever been false charged yet?
Once I did, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
But he stopped about 3 paces in, which was enough for me to just start backing up a little bit.
Well, that's a false charge.
Yeah. And he went 3 paces in, and I said, you know, I was talking to him, and then I started waving my arms and hollering. And
well, was it he or she? A mother with cubs? Or
no, it was not a mother with cubs, and that's what was kind of weird, but it was a big bear. I would say he had to go like 375 or so.
No, that's a little different then.
And it was kind of weird. I guess I might have surprised him because I was walking down a hiking path at the time up in Tannersville.
Mm.
And wasn't really on my guard.
Right.
You know, familiar ground, knew the territory. I knew there were a lot of bears around, but it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
My head wasn't in the game.
If you're attacked by a black bear, you have to fight to the death, by the way. Just
that was my PSA. Plan.
Yeah. That's the research indicates. Very rare, black bears, but if you do,
yes,
fight to the death. So you have sawmilling services for a sawmill. It's not portable, right?
It's not with that manual mill. It's work to make, you know, lumber out of logs. I do run a sawmill for a buddy of mine down the road, so if I ever get anything big, I'm welcome to use his.
Yeah.
What's the largest size you can mill?
Deepers on mine, it's only 28 inches, but and I've done bigger than that, but that ain't fun. That's a whole, you know, afternoon. Down the road, I think I can do 30 inches plus, 34 or something. It's an LT50 wide, so
yeah,
that's a nice machine, which is also fun to run. So, you know.
And you also do furnishings.
Yeah, I do. I have a web page, and there's some pictures of some of the stuff I've made. And I prefer that somebody comes to me and tells me what they want, because then when I put my effort into it, I know I'm making it for a particular person with a particular set of needs or requirements, and I make it the way they want it rather than the way I think it should look.
Now, before we get into the, you know, the meat of the show, what I really want to ask you about is mushroom logs. But consultations, what are some, you know, typical demographics you're finding out there and questions commonly that you find?
A lot of it, actually all of it, now that I think about it, because I never really thought about it. If I was a real business person, I would have thought about that before. But a lot of it is folks that are not familiar with the area. They haven't grown up around here.
Yeah.
So, and that's not a them and us thing. That's just a familiarity thing. You don't know the trees, you don't know the terrain, and importantly, you don't know the history. When you start talking about how these hills used to be, you know, pretty close to bald not all that long ago, they weren't clear cut, but they sure were taken down quite a bit, and there are a lot of abandoned farms. And so when you go on somebody's property that's heavily wooded,
mm-hmm,
with you know, pioneer species, and you tell them this is part of an old farm, they don't believe you.
Oh, really? You know? Yeah.
They had their own stories about why the rock walls are going through the woods, and you know.
Oh, yeah. What do they say? What do you think?
Some bizarre things, you know, just everything from Indian burials to.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't know because they don't know the area, you know. But ignorance is curable. I enjoy, you know, trying to bring them up to speed on what their property likely was. You know, I'm a big fan of Dr. Kudish and his book. And, matter of fact, I'm going through a third reading right now because I haven't read it in a couple of years.
Catskill Forest of History?
Yeah.
That's an excellent book. And if I had to choose a really good book, Wilderness to Woodstock by Al Fevers.
I have.
Excellent.
I have 2 copies of that one myself.
It's a great book.
Yep.
Very easy. You know what's nice about it? Short chapters.
Mm.
And you can read each chapter alone if you wanted, the way they're written. But he's got a sense of humor, too, I find.
Yeah.
It's easy to read.
He really brings the story out of the region.
Yeah.
You're reading it, right?
There's a narrative there, yeah, that it's strong in his writing.
Yeah, it's great.
That's why I have 2 copies. I loaned a copy to a friend of mine out in Michigan, and he had it 2 years because he read it once, he enjoyed it so much, he says, I want to let that sit for a while, and I want to read it again next year. And he did. And then he gave it back to me.
I think Al Fevers passed away in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
He lived into his 80s or 90s.
That's my recollection, yeah.
In Shady, Ulster County.
There's a lot of good books in and around the Catskills, and some of them are small. You know, Purple Mountain Press has published a lot of good books.
Yeah.
Some of them are hard to find. Like, I can't believe that Dr. Kudish's book is not being reprinted. You know, it's been out of print a long time. If you can find a copy, it's usually not cheap.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Woodsman Forest Products with Tom Linvite. And up next, we're going to ask Tom about these mushroom logs. But first, we have this song, and Tom will tell you about it afterwards. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is Woodsman Forest Products with Tom Linvite. That was The Mammals, Plank Road?
Old Plank Road, yeah.
Okay.
That was The Mammals' first iteration in 2002. They are now touring together with a slightly different lineup, but headed up by Ruth Younger and Mike Miranda. They happen to be neighbors of mine, by the way. And I always enjoyed that tune. It's local music from the Catskills, another one of our exported products here.
So, tell us about mushroom logs. You know, what are you looking for in a mushroom? First of all, what is a mushroom log?
Yeah, good question. I get asked at least twice a week, what's a mushroom log? Mushroom logs are logs that growers use to cultivate mushrooms that grow on logs. It sounds pretty simplistic. But certain mushrooms prefer certain species of wood. So they look for particular, and then certain growers have, the chefs and the connoisseurs will tell you that certain woods produce certain flavors in the same given mushroom. Shiitake's grown on red oak versus shiitake's grown on something else will taste a little bit different. The same way they'll tell you that shiitake's cultivated in a commercial environment don't taste nearly as good as shiitakes that are grown in a woods environment on a, you know, a farm operation. So growers are particular about their wood, especially as they get better at it.
What do you think?
So,
do you eat mushrooms?
I don't like mushrooms.
He just provides wood.
Sorry, John, if you're listening. John was here last week, and he said there's something wrong with people that don't like mushrooms. They just haven't had the right ones, and that could be very possible. It's just...
Yeah. Not, like, you don't like any?
Not something that ever appealed to me.
Yeah. What about you, Zane? You a mushroom guy?
Oh, I love mushrooms.
Any particulars?
Well, the first great mushroom I had was up in Cranberry Lake in Adirondacks, and a professor there harvested some chicken of the woods. And he prepared it so simply. It was just in a pan with a little bit of lemon juice and a cracked pepper. And that was probably one of the best meals I've ever had.
That's it, huh? And you just let the moisture steam away?
And it was still fibrous, and it really had that texture of chicken. And it really did taste like chicken, but it didn't look like chicken. It didn't smell like chicken. It was just something you grab out of a tree, and within a few minutes, it's out of the kitchen, and it's delicious.
Nice.
Hmm. And I need to meet that professor because somebody just hasn't taught me.
But that convinced me. I mean, that's proof is in the pudding, I guess.
I mean, tonight I'll eat maitake or hen of the woods. I think it's excellent. Excellent. But John had a good idea last week. He says just fry it to get the moisture out first, then add your butter.
Hmm.
So I did do that, and it seemed to work better. So well,
John should know.
He should know. He knows. He knows his stuff, man.
So could someone get just like a log... They're so excited about getting these mushroom logs. So they just go into the forest and start looking at the logs in the forest floor and bring them out.
Unfortunately, no, because the requirements for a log, you can obviously the species is important, and it's particular to the type of mushrooms you cultivate. But the log has to be a live, healthy tree with no... You know, big cankers on it, no diseases, no insect infestation. It has to be a healthy tree.
Hmm.
So that means cutting green trees to take the logs. Usually my average log length is 40 inches. I just settled on that. It fits good in my trailer. I can load the trailer up best that way. And between 4 and 6 or 7 inches in diameter. Some, like, for instance, I cut for John, and he likes them because he does classes. It's easier for people to pick them up and transport them and get them home and handle them.
So 4 feet, about?
He prefers 3-footers for the larger ones, and then if I get down smaller, make them a little longer.
Right.
You know, it's all, that's simply, you want enough mass in the log to support the mycelium and let it grow.
I see.
And spread. So if the log is too small, you don't have a lot to work with. If it's too big, it's very difficult to handle. Some people grow them on 12-inch diameter trees, but they'll plant that, not trees, but logs. They'll essentially stick the log in a hole in the ground so it sticks up, and instead of soaking the log to shock it in the spring, they'll water the log, or they'll get a cold weather strain that doesn't require shocking at all. So there's a lot of variation, but basically it's just got to be the right species tree, a size you can work with, and a good, healthy piece of wood.
So about 4 feet, plus or minus.
Yeah.
Right? And what about diameter?
Diameter between 4 and 6 inches.
Yeah.
You know, I go a little high and a little low sometimes. It depends on the client. Occasionally I cut them a little on the small side and... throw that in as an extra. I always like to give a few extras.
Yeah.
And some people come, the people that come to my place and pick up, they'll actually go for the smaller ones. So I throw them in there too if that's what they want, you know.
Yeah, in the timber world, we would call those these pole woods.
Yeah.
So pole stands are, I mean, there's some areas, there's tons of them, but they're not as common as they used to be, though, that diameter. I mean,
not in the species I need, and that's the problem. The predominant, you know, shiitake seems to be the most desirable mushroom.
Okay.
And so I try and stick to the breeds for shiitake, white oak, red oak, hickories.
That's getting harder to find.
White oak for me was as rare as hen's teeth. When I cut back in June, there was not. I saw one white oak after... I think 15 working days in the woods, and that white oak was only 2 inches in diameter, and it was in horrible shape.
It was probably suppressed.
Blighted and suppressed and didn't have a chance in the world.
Yeah.
So everything I cut was red oak and a little bit of sugar maple. Now, where I'm cutting now, I see some sugar maple, but the landowner wants to keep those. And we are thinning some of them out, but there's a lot of white oak. So I got some beautiful white oak logs I've been cutting for John for the last month or so. And I just took a few more, and I got some hickories. And because you can't just go and say, hey, there's a great mushroom tree, because believe me, my mind sees them all the time. You know, I'm walking on somebody's property. Wow, nice mushroom trees. But you don't cut them down just because they're nice mushroom trees. It has to fit with the management plan for that piece of ground.
Right.
You know, there's got to be some kind of plan. What are you doing with your land?
Now, what kind of hickory does it matter?
I cut both bitternut and also shag bark. And they're both, from all the research I could do, equal hickory and sickory.
What about shiitake needs oak, is what you're saying?
That's the preferred, yeah.
Yeah. But not sugar maple?
Sugar maple is very desirable for shiitakes also, but I, except for the property I'm on now, I don't run into it much. And we're saving that. You know, that's part of his plan. He wants to be able to sugar, you know, when he gets into his older years.
Yeah.
You know, right now, the landowner is in his mid-30s, so he's got a ways to work his plan, you know.
When do you usually cut these, do a lot of these harvestings?
They can, and John talked about this a little last week, and I'm glad he did. They can be pretty much cut any time of year, but it's not a good idea to cut when the sap is moving. You know, it drops down in, you know, this time of year. So I try to minimize the amount I cut. I've got some I'm cutting for John's classes. But that we're just about done with that now as the sap runs down. And then in the spring, you know, once they start to bud out and the leaves start to come out, you got to stop because you got bark slippage problems and the sap is moving. So the tree is not
right
in a very stable situation. And even if you do get them out of the woods okay, without any bark damage, you don't know how long they're going to hold up when they're inoculating the logs, and you know there's still a certain amount of handling, and every time you handle them, there's another opportunity to drop them and have a big piece of bark fly off, and then any kind of bacteria that wants to can get in there and you know, have its way before your preferred, you know, mushrooms start to get a foothold. I don't cut in the spring when the trees are leaving out, for sure. Ideally, wintertime is the best time, because then the logs can be cut and still sit for 6 or 8 weeks, because there isn't really much sap in them. It's not moving. It hasn't moved up in the tree yet. You know, you do a January, February cut. A large majority of the sap is in the wood, is in the roots, and so right now, as soon as I finish up with the stuff I'm cutting for John, in the coming weeks, we're just going out and marking trees, and that's all we're doing. While the leaves are still on, we can assess the health of the tree. We can be certain of the species we're cutting. I'm not great on bark identification in January. So, you know, I can mark the trees now when we get a positive identification on them. Red oak red maple and sugar maple are pretty hard to tell apart sometimes when they're not mature, number one, and there's no leaves on them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those leaves are pretty close together.
Yeah. But look at the buds can help.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, it can be difficult. So this is a pretty specialized thing. I mean, there's not many guys that do it. Why not?
Well, I think it's the labor. It's not that people are lazy, but, boy, it is hard work. And if you want to, you know, do this to make some kind of money off of it, it's probably not what you would call the most profitable thing. It's very labor-intensive. You can't mechanize it. You can't go in the woods with a skidder and start dragging trees out because you rip all the bark off.
Right.
And then you got junk. So everything's pretty much got to be done by hand, which is why lagers won't throw it on as a side business, because, you know, it's just too much handling. You know, It takes too much time. And lagers are running a, you know, a high, heavy capital business. They got skidders, they got strokers, they got log trucks, they got, you know, all the, you know, fellow bunchers and all that stuff. They're not going to mess around. It's just not, doesn't fit in their business profile.
Well, yeah, there's no low-grade market.
Firewood guys, on the other hand, you would think might have an interest. But again, there's a lot of the handwork, and it's handled different. And by the time a firewood person gets their logs, if they come through somebody else, they've already been pretty much skinned alive. If they're cutting their own wood, there's an opportunity there to carefully handle that stuff, and you know, put that off to the side, and then maybe come back later and do a load of mushroom logs or something. But then you have the issue of getting in touch with the growers that want to buy your logs. So now you're into a marketing thing, and it's not a commodity like firewood. Everybody needs firewood, in my mind, anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I just assume everybody needs firewood.
Yeah. I mean, you know, less than 10% of people are burning firewood, I guess.
Really? You think it's that low?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, I think the numbers, it tops out, when I was doing the research, maybe 15% in some places in upstate New York.
Hmm.
But it's really hard.
I bet you it went up last winter, though.
Maybe. Oil wasn't that high, was it?
Yeah, but there were a lot of second homeowners that were coming up and burning a lot more wood. I know all the firewood producers I know, they sold everything they had, and then some.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a firewood guy that has an interest and wants to take the time, they just have to do the marketing and find the suppliers. And I think that takes as much effort, you know. For somebody who's a woods person and used to doing that kind of work, the group of people that you need to be in touch with on the mushroom side it's a different demographic.
Yeah.
Not people that they generally know as acquaintances, you know, casually, to, you know, start up some kind of a relationship.
I mean, you're going to have to charge for it accordingly because it's such a specialized thing, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's
and there's nothing wrong with that.
That's another question. Absolutely not. The question is, what's a fair price?
Whatever the market dictates, I guess.
Well, it doesn't quite work that way because a lot of these are growers that not sure if they want to do this. They want to give it a try, you know, with the pandemic. And I'm guessing this is simply my speculation, but it seems like a lot of people were spending a lot more time at home or a lot more time at their second homes and looking around for things that they always wanted to do or try.
Yeah.
And this is one of them that might fall into that niche. I sold a lot of logs this year to people that were just trying it out for the first time, you know, read about it on the internet and trying it out.
Yeah.
But the pricing, you know, I'm not looking to get rich. I'm just looking to buy a little food and pay my taxes.
Yeah, but how you set a price is by what someone's willing to pay. I mean, you have to set somewhere, right?
But I'm also trying to, you know, if I'm going to do the work, I want to make sure I sell the logs, you know.
Yeah.
It kills me to cut good, healthy trees, even though they're going to be thinned anyway. I don't take anything that's not going to be taken out for another reason. You know, it's got to be worthwhile, and I'm not looking to make a million. So I read on the internet, I got out and did my research like everybody else did, and I believed the stuff I read like everybody else did, which was a mistake. Because if you go out on the internet up until recently and you looked around at, let's just say, various institutions that are well-respected in the state. And you go there and say, what do they say? And they say you should be able to get logs for 50 cents to $1.50 a piece.
Jesus.
They also say you should be able to just find a logger and ask him if you can go in and cut logs off his treetops.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to work.
Right.
No. You know, no logger in his right mind is going to let somebody come in and cut.
Well, especially now at the market's high, those guys are busy.
So
cutting high grade
timber. The prices are not. Fortunately, I attended a seminar, and it was online, but it was a live seminar, and I hooked up with another seller, and he and I swapped phone numbers and got together offline afterwards and talked for over an hour on the phone. It's not a real competitive business in that if I'm selling and he's selling, he's not looking to outsell me or take customers from me. So I talked to him and found out all he sells is sugar maple.
Yeah.
He's got nothing else. Couldn't sell a red oak if he wanted to, you know. Just doesn't have them.
Yeah.
So any customers I get that would call me up and say, I only want sugar maple, I give him his name and number.
Yeah.
Send him up there. He's in Catskill. There's only five guys on the map that are listed with Cornell as log suppliers in New York right now.
Yeah, it's not, you're never going to get rich at, you got, you know, like I said, you'll know if your price is too high when you can't sell any logs.
Well, I told
him the same thing with firewood, you know.
I told him what I was charging, and he said, I don't know how you can make any money at that. I said, I don't either, but I'm going to try it and see how it works out. Well, I kept track of the money, and after the winter season was over and I thought I was done for the year, time to get back to regular work, I said, $3 a log ain't cutting it.
Right.
So from now on, it's $4 a log, and I almost might make some money.
Yeah.
And then my second surprise season came up, got some phone calls, and all of a sudden people wanted logs. And I wound up with some big orders, and I hooked up with a logger that had just got a piece of property up in the Gilboa area. And he called me and said, Tom, I looked at this place. All I see is mushroom logs. And I got to clean out almost all of it because there's been no forestry management plan on this place for 60 years or more. He said it's a mess. Plus, it's all full of trucks, old farm equipment. All that's got to come out. And the only way to get it out is to cut it out.
Yeah.
He said, so there's lots of spots on here. We're clear cutting it to let it grow back up. And so I went in and almost everything red oak.
Wow.
You know,
that's rare.
And some nice stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I look for trees that are like 7-8 inches on the butt, and that gives me a good number of logs. And I use 85% of that tree gets used.
Yeah.
And the rest gets chipped or whatever.
Or, leave it on the ground.
What about the limbwood? Say, if you.
Limbwood works just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works just fine. As long as it doesn't get skinned on the way down. The hickory that I recently harvested. That was two trees that came down in a wind rainstorm. Flukes.
Yeah.
Right across the road from me.
Hmm.
The landowner said, can you get them out of here and clear up my skid trail so I can drive the ATV through?
Right.
And sure, I can do that. So I still have to
The difference
get the logs out.
Firewood and mushroom logs, I would imagine, is there's way more competition with firewood. I mean, that's why the price is so low.
Yeah.
I think it's low. Yeah. I think 200 to 250 is low for a cord of firewood, the amount of work that goes into it. But there's also a lot of competition.
Yeah.
Those guys would love to probably charge more, but there's competition, you know?
Well, if you do the numbers, and I have, let's use your $250 a cord thing.
Yeah.
If you take the mushroom logs I cut and add up what I cut to make up 128 cubic foot cord, I'm getting somewhere, I wrote it down when I figured it out, somewhere around $750, $780 a cord.
Right.
Which sounds like really good money.
That's decent.
Yeah. But remember, you're picking up every one of those logs at least three times before they get to the customer.
Yeah.
And carrying them by hand.
Mm-hmm.
There's no conveyors used. There's no skidders. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
It's drop the tree where it lays. And bucket right there to your lengths, pick them up, carry them to whatever you're using to move them, whether it's a pickup truck or a side-by-side, which is what I use, that goes through the woods, and then bring them out to your truck and load them again in the truck and then bring them home and put them on the deck and wait for the customer to pick them up or go deliver them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of handling.
Yeah, and, you know, you got wear and tear on your truck.
Wear and tear on my body, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Part of my log income goes to support my chiropractor.
Yep. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. We got some more questions up next for Tom Lindvite, and if you're missing the show, we're talking to Woodsman Forest Products, and I am saying it right? Tom Lindvite?
Yep.
All right.
Exactly.
We got some more questions for you next.
And that's all.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talking about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is Woodsman Forest Products with Tom Winvite. Tom, who was that?
That was In the Kitchen, and the tune was called Flash Flood. It was written by the fiddle player that plays the fiddle in your opening tune, Evan Schultes. And the band is no longer, but that was another good album that was exported from the Catskills.
Cool.
That one was recorded very close to your house.
Yeah, Sampsonville there. Yeah. So, you know, you were talking about cutting trees and stuff. How does that fit into forest management?
Well, if you have a management plan, and everybody should have a management plan, you know, for their property, if it's more than a suburban lot, I think, you know. And most people do, they just don't call it a management plan.
Right.
I want it to look like this. I want to do that. So any trees I take should fit with that, you know. One of the reasons I do business with, you know, reputable loggers when I can get access is because I know they're working with a forester, and they're executing whatever the management plan was for that land. So whatever I take is within that plan, and I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm cutting on private land that doesn't have a official forestry management plan in place, but the landowner has a real good idea of what he wants to do, and he can see the abuse the property's been through in the last 50 or 60 years that he has to rectify before he can even start looking at anything else. So there's a lot of cleaning up going on. Right now what we're cutting is trees that have had tops broken, things that are obviously not going to turn into healthy trees. They're growing up so thick, all these poles, that you need to thin them out no matter what. So you go through and you pick the better ones and you look for You know, he's got a swamp on part of the property. He gets beaver damage.
Well, so, just by nature, I mean, half those trees won't be there in a pole stand.
Yeah, yeah.
Just by, you know, it's just...
It's overgrown and it needs to be thinned anyway.
They will. I mean, even if you don't do anything, there'll be half the numbers of trees in a few decades from then.
Yeah, they're going to grow up and then they die.
Mm-hmm.
And they still keep the shade, you know, high.
What about ironwood? I mean, that tree is everywhere in the Catskills. Can you use it?
Well, you tell me what you mean by ironwood.
I mean Astraea virginiana. That's what I mean.
Oh, okay, you're going to start... Test me here, because I got.
It's the one with flaky bark.
Yeah.
Hop hornbeam.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's the thing. If you look up ironwood, you'll find out there's over 100 species that are referred to as ironwood.
Not musselwood, not Carpinus caroliniana. I'm talking about the hop hornbeam.
Hop hornbeam and hornbeam are two of the prime wood types for shiitakes.
Well, that's great, because there's a ton of them.
Yeah, there's a ton of them, and if you're... there's a property I work on that's just south of where you live, and he's got a lot of hop hornbeam in there. And he's offered me a few logs once in a while, but I look at it and say, you know, these are good, nice, straight trees, and we just took out three trees around it. Let's let this one go.
Yeah.
You know, we keep them.
Well, that's great news, because there's a tree that's underutilized. It's pretty mature, abundant.
Yeah.
It's a mid-story tree. It's not really going to get much bigger, so it gets suppressed and kind of sits there. It can be a lot older than people think. And, so higher elevations especially, it's very prevalent.
We don't have a lot by me because I'm down at around 600 feet.
Yeah.
The big difference between them is that you usually find hop hornbeam in drier upland areas, and then in the bottom lands, you'll find that musselwood in more moist areas.
Yep.
Yeah, musselwood I've only seen once or twice, and at the time I never took note of where I was.
People call it ironwood as well, but yeah.
That's the problem. Ironwood covers way too many things. So.
Yeah, musselwood's a good name because it looks striated like a mussel. And so I don't know. There's a lot of those trees. Who is your demographic mostly you're selling to, and what's the scope of this thing? I mean...
Everything from commercial growers that have been doing this for a long time. One of the inquiries I had to turn down was the guy that told me he was the largest grower of shiitake mushrooms in the state of Connecticut. But he wanted, he was one of the first contacts I had that called me. He wanted between 100 and 1,000 logs at a shot, up to a 4,000 log maximum per season.
Wow.
And that was just way out of my ballpark. And they could only be white oak. And at the time, I had not cut one white oak log. Now, of course, I'm knocking them out. But it's not in the 1,000 log quantity.
No.
So,
no.
You know, he was a large one. I've done farms.
He's got them in Connecticut. He has a better chance of having them there than here.
He actually goes up to New Hampshire for his white oak.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an expensive operation, but he said he's rotating out between 2,000 and 3,000 logs a year that are aging out, because a log, you know, only get 4 years out of it, maybe. It
goes backwards.
It starts to produce less. But I've also had farms that have bought like 120 logs to get their grow operation going, and that should be a substantial number of logs for them to produce for like a truck stand or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, they call them farm stands now. And I've also had the homeowners that buy 1 to 5 logs to try it out. And then there was that deal with shipping logs down to Brooklyn
that I
never expected. That was kind of interesting.
Down from Kingston?
Yeah, I harvested the logs in Gilboa. I brought them down to the Maritime Museum in Kingston. They were put on a schooner, called the Apollonia. You can look them up. They have some photos on their website. And they sailed those down the river. They stopped in, I think, Poughkeepsie and Newburgh and perhaps Beacon before going to Brooklyn to do mushroom inoculating workshops, and sold some logs along the way. And then the rest of them, and it was over 250 left that they had orders for in Brooklyn. And they're going on balcony gardens and community gardens and things like that.
It's cool.
So, yeah, that was pretty neat. It's a lot of fun working with those people. All good folks.
So what's something you wish people knew about the forest?
I wish they took the time to figure out how the forest worked, because the forest is very complex. And you can just sit on a log in the woods where there's seemingly no activity. And if you just pay attention to what's going on and see what's popping up. And I'm working on the same ground I've been working on for months now, and every day I see something new. And I wind up going home that night and getting out my reference books with a leaf to try and figure out what this thing is. Because the terrain is there. It's 2 miles from my house.
Yeah.
You would think after living there for over 35 years, I would know what woods look like within 2 miles of my house. But nope, 2 miles down the road, the terrain is so different. And it's just almost like a whole nother environment, you know? It rains there, it doesn't rain at my house.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, get out there and look and ask questions. And don't believe everything you read on the internet.
No. Yeah, that's I believe that. What's next? We only got about a minute left from the forest here.
What's next? Well, I got logs to deliver tomorrow. John's got a mushroom retreat he was talking about last week.
I'll be there.
And then I have logs to deliver next week. That's for the CFA mushroom inoculation workshop. And I'll probably be out there for that.
I'll see you there.
Just for the heck of it. Yeah. And I've been running a sawmill. I was out milling this morning. A couple hundred board feet got done before I had to go home and get cleaned up. It's just work. Pretty soon we'll be firing up the wood stoves, and I'll be working in the shop. And
what's the most interesting kind of furnishing product you've made that a client's asked for?
Well, I had one that I spent a lot of time trying to talk the client out of making in the first place. The client had come in the shop it was actually a neighbor, and they spied a cookie sitting in the corner. It was a white oak cookie, about 28 inches across, something like that. Pretty good size. It was the flare cookie right off the stump. And they talked me into making a table out of that. It was so pithy and weak that I made ash straps for underneath, and it came out beautiful, but I thought it was the stupidest thing I ever made, but it was gorgeous.
Well, that's all the time we have on From the Forest, and if you missed the show, it was Woodsman Forest Products with Tom Linvite, and thanks for coming on, Tom.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
Night, everyone. Some faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in. From the forest, up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the